You're listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Kamajis, a licensed clinical social worker with a multi-state online therapy practice. I have a passion for empowering women and mom therapists to break free of the fear, overwhelm, and oppressive systems that hold them back from taking action and building the private practice of their dreams. My goal is for you to boldly believe in yourself as a clinician and business owner. If you're looking for a place to learn practice building strategy and skill while also claiming your own power as a woman and a therapist, then you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. Welcome to this week's episode of the Raise to Empower podcast. Starting a private practice or moving into a new phase of your career, say into growing your practice, leaving your agency job, maybe moving into coaching, adding an additional income stream, moving into something new can bring up just so many emotions. Excitement and anxiety are probably the bigger ones. But something that I think we all experience in the process of expanding our careers in some way is the struggle with imposter syndrome. We all have felt this at some point in life, and it has the ability to hold us back from moving forward. So I'm really excited to dive into this topic today with my guest, Lisa Haysmer. Lisa is a licensed therapist in Michigan and a spiritual business coach that helps other therapists develop financial, emotionally, and spiritually fulfilling businesses. Her passion is teaching others how their early attachment wounds not only impact how they feel about themselves, but also what life events they attract to them. By incorporating spiritual tools and experiences in a unique way, her clients can overcome the limiting beliefs that have been holding them back from the professional and personal lives that they want. She is a mom, volleyball player, Harry Potter fan, and a continuous walker on her own healing journey. Lisa, thank you so much for being here today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for allowing me to be here. I think it's awesome that you create the space that I just am like, oh, I feel lucky to be a part of it.
Yes, I love having these conversations with other women in this field and that are supporting other women in this field. So I think it's just great to connect and collaborate with each other because, you know, we need support from all of our colleagues and especially as women, it's hard to be a business owner. It's hard to, you know, work through systems that are trying to fight against us to build businesses. So I'm happy to have this space. So listeners of this show know, first-time guests, I always ask for you to share about your background and how did you say, hey, I think I want to be a counselor. How I think I want to go into private practice. What kind of led you down this path?
You know, I don't know if I'm one of the rare ones that even in high school, like when I was graduating and picking colleges and whatever, I realized this is like what I wanted to do, which is so interesting because I had never done therapy myself as a teenager. So I'm like, where I got this idea. But I think, you know, as with so many of us, it's just our natural gift to want to help people and talk to people and whatever. So right out of the gate, like, went to school. I did an accelerated program. So I got my bachelor's and master's like in 5 years, which was cool. I was extremely green and young and naive though when I graduated. So I worked in residential treatment for 9 years, which was a very intense but awesome like learning environment. Then I left and was working at an agency for a while. And then, you know, I was fortunate in my circumstances to be able to kind of work in my agency job and at the same time start private practice and kind of do both for a while. Yeah, I've been doing private practice for 13 years now.
Yeah.
Which is like crazy to me when I think how long it's been.
Yeah.
And then when the pandemic hit, you know, I went virtual, which I never thought I would be okay with because I'm a big energy person. And I totally thought like I have to be in the same room with somebody to connect with their energy. And then lo and behold, I'm like, oh gosh, I actually don't.
Yeah.
So now just like all virtual.
Which I think is really interesting because I was virtual before the pandemic because it's just it worked best for my career and the moves we have to make as a family. And I have felt the ability to be able to connect with people virtually in a way similar to being in the room with them. But I know that that has been an objection for some people in saying, I'm going to have an all online therapy practice, or I'm even going to do it. And I'm curious for you, who is someone that identifies as like very energetically in tuned and connecting with people that way. Do you think it's just like your nature has just allowed that to still happen virtually? Or do you think that is something that you've had to find ways to cultivate in working online?
Great question. I would say, I don't know that it feels 100% the exact same as when I'm physically in an office with somebody.
Sure.
To me, that actually becomes an advantage, because what I realized is, I might actually appreciate a little bit of energetic space so that other people's stuff doesn't overwhelm me so much. But in your question of like, you know, did I learn to cultivate this? I think I realized what has been true all along, I just wasn't realizing it, that my belief is all of us can, we just maybe don't know how to. We can connect energetically whenever we want to. And though I can't explain like the quantum physics of it,
sure.
I really don't. But the whole time space thing isn't as much of a thing as we think that it is. And so starting to work virtually, it was like, if I intentionally try to like tune in energetically to my clients, I'm like, I can feel that. Oh, okay. So I just think we took it for granted that we needed to be in the same space when we actually don't.
Yeah. And the beauty of that is that it opens up the door for people to access services that maybe never would have been able to before because of the convenience, or some of the roadblocks to getting to an in-office appointment aren't there with virtual.
Absolutely. Especially because, you know, in my case, the way that I want to structure my schedule is, you know, with my family, I'm like, I don't want to work a lot of evenings.
Right.
And so if I'm working more daytime hours, I need more daytime clients. And the bonus of working virtual that a lot of my clients don't have to do the commute thing. So work with a lot of people while they're technically at work, you know, and they go to an office or whatever. So it's absolutely advantageous.
Yeah. So I know today we're going to be talking about imposter syndrome and, you know, some of the connections to attachment wounds. But I know in, you know, some of the information you shared with me in preparation for this episode was kind of talking about like your work and journey into working with others about imposter syndrome kind of came from your own experience with that in private practice. Can you share a little bit about what that was like for you?
Yeah, I think the way that I have noticed that imposter syndrome seems to show up in people, and I don't like boxes and labels and things like that. I think of things more on like a spectrum. But sometimes imposter syndrome, I feel like, shows up as like really obvious, like the negative self-talk of like, I'm so stupid, I could never do that, right? And then sometimes imposter syndrome shows up in this more like subtle way, which this category was me for a very long time, which was my imposter syndrome was, I don't know, like so bad that I didn't even allow myself to think expansively. So I was in a space of like making, quite honestly, a crappy salary, but also being like, no, I'm doing pretty good. Like I'm a good. So I didn't even allow myself to think about, but what if you could do better?
Yeah.
So I wasn't shooting myself down because I wasn't even letting myself think of options and opportunities. And, you know, eventually I started realizing that and that started changing. But it was sort of little by little by little realizing like, oh, maybe I can ask for more. Maybe I do want more. But it wasn't until like really diving in and doing like a lot of my own inner healing work, which I didn't start because I wanted to become a better therapist or a better, you know, business owner. I did it because I was trying to work on my own crap, right?
Yeah.
But in that work, starting to realize that my beliefs about abundance you know, I know we kind of throw that word abundance around a lot, but like to me, abundance is good stuff, whether that means money, whether it means free time, like great connections, all of those to me are abundance. My beliefs about abundance, I realized, stemmed from my attachment experiences growing up of like the way that I grew up was that my needs were taken care of, but don't ask for what you desire, Lisa. Like, because if you do, and it was not just asking for my desires in like a financial way, like a new pair of jeans or no, it was like I wasn't allowed to ask, not allowed. It wasn't encouraged in me to ask for attention or love or connection. So these subtle beliefs started developing in me that says people don't really want what you have to offer. Don't ask for more money, you know, raising my fee or whatever. Like, don't ask for that because you don't get what you want. You get what you expect, or like, you're only allowed to ask for so much. So all these pieces started like falling together where I'm starting to was starting to realize like, oh my goodness, my beliefs about what I can ask for my business as a therapist go all the way back to those early experiences. A wild ride.
Well, it's really interesting because I've never really thought of the idea of like limiting beliefs or imposter syndrome as connected to these attachment wounds, but they really are. And that whether we can trace it back to family of origin or just the narratives that have been spoken to us or at us or that we've been told our whole lives, I think especially as women, we've been told to make ourselves small, right? To not ask for more, to
As
not.
women, as I think mental health professionals, a lot of times we get different messaging about being of service and it's greedy if we ask, you know, for more money or whatever. So we get the double dose of people in society encouraging us to be small and quiet and subservient.
Yeah, no, it's you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a del you get, you know, you have if you grew up in a family that didn't encourage wanting more or dreaming bigger or not having a cap on kind of what you're allowed to desire or want, and then you have the messages from society, but then you add in the professional piece too, which is I mean, you see that even in conversations online amongst therapists of like, how dare you want something different, or how like the audacity that you would even consider charging X amount or whatever it is, but that even within our profession, and not just where the profession started, but it still exists today, this idea of there's only so much that you can want. There's only so much you can ask for. There's only so much that you deserve.
We're getting like the triple dose of it. But this is again where I'm like, this is where what you are doing is awesome because it's inviting people to challenge those thoughts, challenge those beliefs. And I think even like doing our own inner healing work helps to eradicate a lot of that.
Are you a mental health practitioner looking to streamline your administrative tasks and get rid of the overwhelm of running your practice? Look no further than Simple Practice, the electronic health record designed with you in mind. Simple Practice isn't just another electronic health record. It's your secret weapon for simplifying the chaos. From scheduling appointments to billing and beyond, Simple Practice has everything you need to run your practice efficiently and effectively. With Simple Practice, you can finally reclaim your time and focus on what truly matters, your clients and your family. Gone are the days of scrambling to manage appointments and billing. Simple Practice handles it all seamlessly so you can spend less time stressing and more time connecting. With Simple Practice, you can schedule appointments with ease, send automated appointment reminders to reduce no-shows, and even conduct secure video sessions all within one platform. Plus, their HIPAA-compliant telehealth feature ensures that your client's privacy is always protected. Simple Practice also streamlines your billing process, allowing you to create and send professional invoices, accept credit card payments, and even submit insurance claims all with just a few clicks. Simple Practice has designed their platform to be intuitive and easy to use because they know that your time is precious and every moment counts. So whether you're squeezing in clients between school pickups and sports practices or catching up on paperwork during nap time, Simple Practice has your back. Join the ranks of empowered women and mom therapists who are revolutionizing their practice with Simple Practice. Ready to streamline your practice and simplify your life? Head over to bit.ly/AshleySimplePractice to start your 30-day free trial and get up to $200 off your paid subscription. Trust me, you won't know how you ever lived without it. We've all been told we need to network in our private practice, but no one actually tells us how to do it or what to say. Enter Comprehensive Connecting, effective scripts that expand your networking community and actually fill your online practice. This free guide will give you effective scripts to connect with fellow clinicians, medical professionals, and community stakeholders to build strong networking relationships that will help fill your practice. In this guide, you will get tips and tricks for building relationships that will lead to referrals in your practice, real-life examples of messages used to connect with referral sources, and customizable plug-and-send scripts for your specific practice needs. So download your free scripts guide today by going to bit.ly/compconnecting. In your work with clinicians around this imposter syndrome and the attachment wounds, are there common themes that you notice? Or like, again, whether it is rooted in family of origin or rooted in friends or society or wherever these wounds come from, are there common narratives or common themes that you see many of us carrying?
The biggest thing that I feel like I see is that as therapists, I think, you know, we're all pretty aware of the big T trauma and like the effects that it can have on a person and their development and their beliefs. What is, I don't know, a little bit surprising to me, but I was guilty of this as well, is not noticing the effects of what I, you know, of little T trauma. It's like the little sneaky stuff that there wasn't overt abuse or neglect or whatever, but these more subtle attachment wound things, those are like sneaky. Yeah. So I feel like even as therapists, with a lot of my therapy clients and coaching clients, obviously, but a lot of my therapy clients are also other therapists. And so even with them, we're so smart, we're so gifted at helping our clients, but missing how that little T trauma stuff affected us because it's so sneaky and so subtle. Of just how it has shaped our beliefs about ourselves and what we can ask for from the world and things like that. So in helping people to kind of get a little more curious and a little bit more investigative into their own lives, really a fascinating process because they start to like put the pieces together.
Yeah. Well, and again, if you're not looking at it from this place of like, where is this rooted in, right? Like, it can just feel like, well, this is just true for me, right? Like, I'm not allowed to ask for more, right? Or I'm not allowed to want more or want something different. Everybody else is, right? Like, I see other people with private practices that look the way that I would want mine to, right? But they're allowed to do that, but I'm not. And I think to first get curious about why are you not allowed, right? Like, to recognize.
Totally interrupted you.
No, that's okay. But like to recognize that belief doesn't have to be true.
So my question with people when they get to that space of like, oh, somebody else can have that, but I can't, is always like, where did you learn that?
Yeah.
Where did you learn that you're not allowed to ask more? And a simple question like that, like, befuddles even the smartest therapist sometimes because they're like, oh, I don't know where I learned that. Or they're like, oh, well, I had this experience growing up or whatever. Sure. And it's like, it comes to the forefront and they go, holy cow, I can see now how that belief has been running like this little theme throughout my whole life.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't remember if I read something about this recently or if I heard it on another podcast recently or if it was a conversation I was having with somebody, but whatever it was talking about imposter syndrome and the way that it shows up differently a lot of times in women versus men. And this idea that a lot of times in men, it shows up in that, like, maybe they have gotten the job, they've reached this pinnacle of their career or this place in their career, and the imposter syndrome shows up as, can I do this? Can I complete the task? Do I have the capability to be in this role? Whereas a lot of times for women, it shows up as, am I worthy of being here? And not even here, but am I worthy of being there? Or what do I have to prove that I belong? Do I deserve to be here? And that it's not about like the task itself, can I complete this? But it's, do I belong here?
Yeah, that's fascinating and kind of rings true when you're saying that. And it's interesting, like as you're saying that, I'm like, I think that was me as well. But again, I'm like, mine showed up differently. I had this like very eye-opening experience that doesn't initially sound like it's related to like being a therapist in business, but it is, that you're making me think about that. In the beginning of the pandemic, my husband and I were deciding to like move. We wanted to get a new house. We wanted to get a little bit bigger, a little bit nicer house. So before the pandemic started, we were like, okay, let's do this. Like, let's get the financing all lined up. Cool. We're ready to go. So we started looking, and then the pandemic hit, and then anybody that was house shopping during the pandemic would know, like, it was,
yeah.
So literally this was like a 3-year process of us looking at a million houses. We made offers on probably 6 houses that were well above the asking prices and like losing every time. And so because I, you know, am a believer of this law of attraction thing, this energy thing, in my mind, I'm like, I need to get clear. Like, something's going on here because I don't understand why we can't like make this happen. Because, you know, the money's in the bank. That's not the thing. So I'm like, let me be curious about my energy and just see if there's something about my energy that is making me not manifest this. So I know I'm kind of like sidebarring into the energy part. Law of attraction says that the energy that I put out into the universe is what I attract back to me like a magnet, whether I'm intending to or not.
Mm.
So sometimes people, you know, they hear about manifesting and they think like, okay, I'm going to manifest a new car. I'm going to picture the new car or whatever, which is great and cool and fine. But we have to realize it's happening all of the time, whether you're intending to or not.
Sure.
And what most people don't understand is it's not based on what you're saying with your words. It actually operates based on what you're feeling. So how we are feeling like literally carries these little energy waves out into the universe, and then it's like a magnet. And so at the time, I didn't know anything about IFS, but I was aware, you know, of like parts work in general. So I'm like, I must have a part that is feeling a certain thing that is then putting out this energy, and like, this is why we can't seem to get a house. Let me just be curious. So I sat down. It wasn't like exactly meditation, but I always, when I want to tune in, I sit down and I close my eyes because I tune into myself better that way. And I closed my eyes and I was like, okay, let me just see what shows up. Let me imagine me in my new house. Not in the way that a lot of people do it, where they're like, I want to picture the new house and what it looks like and the colors and whatever. I wasn't doing that. I wanted to be curious about my feelings. So So I'm like, let me imagine myself in my new house. It doesn't matter what it looks like, but how does it feel? So I kind of just like, oh, it feels like so exciting. I'm so glad we're here. And I'm like, I love that I get to have a, whatever, a big kitchen. I love that, you know, it's decorated the way that I want. I can't believe I get to live here. And I was like, what was that? I can't believe I get to live here. So that's that worthy piece that you were talking about, right? And so I'm still sitting there with my eyes closed and I'm like, what was that? And I'm like, why would I not believe I get to live here? And because I was in like this tuning into myself place with my eyes closed, it keeps me out of my thinky brain a little bit more, and like my intuitive or my parts or whatever will answer more easily. So I'm like, why would I believe I don't get to live here? And the instantaneous response that came from one of my parts was, Lisa, you can't even get your mom to love you. Why would you believe you deserve a house? And I was like, what? But I immediately started crying. If you asked my brain, Lisa, do you deserve this house? I'd be like, yeah, because here's what I have in the bank. It doesn't matter. I have these parts that were telling me you don't deserve to get what you really desire. Because you have a house already, Lisa. You
But
don't
you
get to
can't want
have what you
more.
desire. You can't want more. And so I, you know, cried, but, you know, kind of used some of the tools that I had learned over the years to like allow my feelings to be there. But then, like, how do I shift them into things that feel better? 2 weeks later, made an offer on a house and got a house. Because I shifted the belief part. I didn't know it was hiding around in there, right? So that's about a house, but I'm like, it's the same thing for us as women business owners trying to create a thriving practice. I'm like, it's the same concept that you were mentioning of like, it's the worthiness piece. And sometimes it's so sneaky that we're not even aware that we're botching the system.
No, absolutely. And I think I mean, that's just such a powerful example. And you know, one of the questions I like to ask people to consider sometimes when there is these limiting beliefs or the imposter syndrome of like, well, I don't other again, other people can do that, or you know, that like it this just isn't what I thought it would be, or this isn't I don't know if I'm capable of this, is to ask like whose voice is saying that, right? Because I think your example is so powerful, where like you're like, no, I believe I can have a house, right? Like I know, like I can do it, right? Look at the money in the bank. But that, I mean, it goes all the way back to mom, right? In that. And then like, okay, when it comes to practice building, there's probably stuff rooted in parents or family members, but also like, are there professors' voices in there? Are there colleagues' voices in there? You know, are there friends or, you know, just messages that we've, you know, seen on TV or we read in magazines as little girls growing up or whatever it may be? But that looking at those voices and those parts that are responding to them, I think it is so important to be able, like if you're saying, I want this, the house, or I want a practice, I want time freedom, I want flexibility, I want autonomy, I want growth in my career, but I don't know, I don't feel like I'm worthy of it, or I don't feel like I'm allowed to have those things, whose voices are telling you you can't? And in looking at them, are we going to give those voices power still?
Because once we can identify whose voice it is, in many cases, we then, get the choice of, oh, wait a minute. I haven't paused to think about whether I want to take this person's opinion of me.
No, absolutely. Are they someone that like in other aspects of my life, do I value their opinion?
Do they have everything on my desire list? Both in terms of income and free time and my own personal values around integrity and service.
Yeah.
Like, do they meet all of those? Because if they do, okay, maybe I have something to learn there, right? Well,
yeah.
I can hold myself accountable if there's genuinely things I need to work on. But they don't check all those boxes. As
yeah.
kids, you know, obviously we're so much more susceptible to believing what other people tell us about ourselves. We don't have as many like free choices, or we don't know that we do. But those sneaky little beliefs are still hiding in us until we start to identify them.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone recently said, in talking about imposter syndrome, you know, the people who's those voices, right, that are like showing up for you and thinking that I can't start a practice, or I can't grow my business, or I can't expand, of asking the question, like, are their opinions going to like be the thing to pay my bills? Right. Like, if you're saying, I see again, so much in our profession is so judgmental and so, scared of new things. And so when we see somebody doing something new, right, like moving into an all online therapy practice, or moving into coaching, or moving into consulting, or something totally different related to the profession, and then we come out very judgmental and not accepting of that, and then those things hold us back. But those narratives, those voices, are they going to pay our bills? Are they going to be the thing, right, when the mortgage payment comes due, that they're going to step up and cover that? If we're saying, like, I need different things in my life, whether it is financial independence or freedom or more time for family, for myself, or whatever it may be, are those voices that are, like, you know, impacting that in creating that imposter syndrome going to be the things that are going to financially sustain us? 99% of the time, no. They're not going to step up and be like, well, let me give you the money to do that so that you can have those things that you want and need.
And I love that you're even saying 99%, because right as you said that, I was like, oh, my ex-husband was that 1%. And guess why I left? Guess
yeah.
why I left? Because so he did pay my bills or contributed to my bills, right? But in that scenario, I was like, oh, I limits, boundaries,
yeah.
like you setting a ceiling of. And he wasn't saying, like, Lisa, because you're a woman or because you're a therapist, but it was more his beliefs that, like,
yeah,
very, very small. And I was like, oh, this isn't.
Yeah.
I need thriving energy and environment. So, like, oh, I need to make a different choice. That's a whole other podcast.
That's a whole other thing. For those that may be like listening and saying, like, okay, I'm seeing this imposter syndrome, like, I'm hearing what you're saying, and I can absolutely see that this is impacting what I want for my life, whether it is personal, whether it is business, I mean, which those two are very intertwined, whether it is career-wise, moving into practice, moving into coaching, moving away from it, or whatever it may be. What are some things, you know, some first steps that people can do to start really looking at the wounds that may be impacting this, you know, these feelings of imposter?
Yeah. I think one of the most important things that all of us can do as humans, but especially as therapists, and hopefully we're doing this with our clients as therapists, but is like, be curious, right? Like, so a while ago I created this little cheat sheet on like a self-doubt detox, but really it was because I wanted to lay out a lot of the ways that I see it popping up for us. So kind of like what you're saying, if people are starting to realize, like, oh, I think I maybe have some limiting beliefs, it goes back to what you were saying of, like, you know, being curious about whose voice is that? Where did that come from? Where did I start to believe that? And once we start to identify those things, then we can learn, how do we want to agree with this person? Are they paying my bills? And I think we can start to shift the beliefs that we're holding about ourselves little by little by little. I am a believer that affirmations are great tools. But sometimes, again, it goes back to that belief part. So if we start to say affirmations of like, I can earn $1 million next year. Cool. If you can say that and your body tells you that that feels possible, cool. Use that affirmation. But if you say that and you have parts in you that go, I don't know, then you need to switch the affirmation to something that feels believable, right? So this is, you know, it's kind of like I don't know, it's like a CBT thing, but also in my world, it's like also a law of attraction thing, because if I don't believe it, I'm going to attract mixed stuff. If I can figure out a way to say stuff in a way that I believe it and it feels true and it feels good, then I attract more of that.
Yeah. So really getting back to first asking the question of where these things come from, but then looking at how can we, like, I love like mantras or like affirmations, because they're a thing I find can like ground us in those moments. But yeah, like you said, if physically there feels like almost like a misalignment as you're saying it, then again, it doesn't mean that you don't want those things, but like there's something in there that's probably blocking some of that, whether it's, you know, blocking the efforts or blocking the energy to be able to make that happen. And so I think it's okay to like re-examine the goals or the affirmations or, you know, the desires to say like what feels, I don't know if manageable is the right word, but like more comfortable maybe. And then being able to, you know, I'm almost thinking as a way of saying, okay, I can, this feels like energetically aligned. This feels more comfortable to say, okay, I can move into this, that if I can succeed in this one area, that maybe then I can build my confidence while also working on shutting out those other voices to feel like I can have more and do more and want more. Again, it's working on healing those wounds, but also I think being confident in ourselves as we're doing it too.
Absolutely. And so if we break it down, whatever, into a practical example for therapists. So if I wanted to raise my private practice fee by $100, like my body already goes like, oh, that would, yeah, like, that's too much. That, right? That's too challenging. I wouldn't find the clients, whatever. So that might not be the great affirmation or mantra for me to try to put that out there. But if I said, you know what, I want to raise my fee by $10, what does that feel like? Oh, okay. Like that feels cool. That feels doable. And kind of to your point, if I did that and clients paid me the $10 extra or whatever, I would start to believe more and more, yeah, and more, oh, I can ask for more. Okay.
Yes.
So maybe however many years from now, I'm going to say, I'm going to raise it by $50, because now I have a greater belief that I do get what I ask. I do, yeah, have value, and people see my value and they do want to pay me more, right? So it kind of starts to expand, yeah, in this good, positive way. It just, it's okay that we do it incrementally.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. For listeners who are saying, okay, maybe like I need to start doing some of this work, and really kind of examining again some of those narratives, some of those beliefs that we've internalized. I know you have a freebie that therapists can kind of grab to start doing some of that work. Can you share a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, so that's my self-doubt detox, which I'm kind of lumping together some of the common ways that self-doubt shows up in us as therapists. And then, like I call it, like the antidote, which is how we gently start to become a little bit more self-aware and gently start to shift with each of those beliefs. And so, you know, totally give that away for free, because it's the it's enough of a good thing to like both pique our interest and help us start to shift a little bit.
Yeah. We will have a link to that in the show notes that people can grab there. Is there anything that you want to leave listeners with to think about or contemplate if they're recognizing like that this imposter syndrome is showing up in how they're running their business or starting or not starting their practice? What's something that you would want to leave people with?
My heart just like answered with this, like, my heart wanted to answer with what I imagine their hearts might need to hear, which is in this very, it's like this very loving, compassionate voice of like, you are worthy. You're worthy of healing. You're worthy of receiving the love and abundance that, you know, maybe weren't always consistently given. And you're worthy of asking for more. And I celebrate therapists choosing to do their own healing work. And I know I, you know, sometimes offer these, you know, kind of weird woo-woo ideas around law of attraction stuff, but you know, I have a I don't know, smallish Facebook group that is all about, literally called the Therapist Empowerment Alliance, because it's like I want a collective place is empowering energy so that people can support each other.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, do a lot of, there's tons of like free resources, and I do live trainings in there all the time, all, you know, for free. But it's like I want that cohesive, loving culture that we didn't always receive.
Yeah. Yeah. And can we cultivate that within our profession? Because again, there are parts within the profession that are not always in support of that for us individually. Lisa, if people want to connect with you outside of the show, where is the best place for them to do that?
Absolutely. They can check out the Therapist Empowerment Alliance Facebook group. I am on Facebook all the time. So it's literally just Lisa Haysmer. My coaching website is very simply lisahaysmer.com.
Yeah.
I swear I'm going to get on Instagram one day. I feel like I'm the only person in the world that's not, because it's like, it just feels like one more thing. But
yeah,
it is on my agenda to like get on there at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we will have in the show notes links to your Facebook group and to your website, and for listeners to go grab that self-doubt detox cheat sheet. So, Lisa, I really appreciate you taking the time to be here today to talk about such an important topic with me. And I know listeners are definitely going to get so much value out of this. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for the awesome opportunity.
Thank you so much for listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. Check the show notes for all links and resources mentioned in the show. If you found today's episode helpful or inspiring, be sure to share it with your therapist friends. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave your 5-star rating and review. It truly means so much to me and will help us get our message of empowerment out to other women and mom clinicians. And I'd love to connect with you in our Facebook community. So check out the show notes for the link, or head to bit.ly/raise to empower to join us. I'll see you back here next week.